In rural South Jersey, where I mostly grew up, apple orchards surrounded us with miles of fruitfulness and roadside stands. I remember the openness of the space where they grew and the smell of apple, of wine sap and Macintosh, and the cool mustiness of what we called the cider place, where we'd get gallons of dark juice and apples by the bushel. How good it tasted to drink down icy cold. How joyful it was to crunch to the core. We grew up with the beauty of apple blossom and the life of the orchards, old wood crawling with beetles and rich with mosses and lichen, wildflowers, bees, and bird life, and of course the excitement of seeing those hard green pippins plump and ripen into autumn when their appley scent was carried in the air with leaf mold and wood smoke, and the deer would get drunk on fermenting windfalls. When I moved to England many years ago, I learned that the British lay claim to the apple as their own in a way as elemental to them as my childhood ownership of apples was to me. The apple runs deep in the national psyche here, and while most of the world has a claim to the apple, Britain can make a convincing case for a distinctive, if not exclusive, relationship with this immensely varied fruit. The apple's heritage is greater than any fruit on these shores. Its use is nearly infinite, from cider to cooking to eating off the tree, with each having its own subtleties and complexities, its own balance of sweetness and acidity, and hints of citrus, licorice, or spice. No other country has specialized so much in an apple for every use, and from every county, and nearly every parish even. The quintessential British apple still has a local stamp from a time when distance was measured by human footsteps, and orchards represented permanence and timelessness in the British landscape. Some say the apple reflects the qualities we associate with Britishness itself: adaptability, tolerance, inventiveness, diversity. With apple season coming to its peak, local orchards, farmers markets, and apple days are offering varieties so numerous it's impossible not to be seduced by their fragrances, shapes, and names, their histories and hues, as colorful as a Shakespearean cast. The jolly reds of Falstaff and buttercup yellow King of the Pippins, the lipstick pink Fuji with its brush strokes of white, Honey Crisp's wild peppermint stripes, the matte reds and browns of Ashmead's Kernel, the diminutive golden Pitmaston pineapple, the multi-green majesty of Bramley and Howgate Wonder, the sunset shades of an Egremont russet. It's a beauty pageant, each variety having some merit distinctly its own, each individual fruit with its personal arrangement of freckles, stripes, and imperfections. Apples are homely and comforting, their associations with the loss of paradise redeemed into wholesomeness. The apple reassures. Unlike a plum or peach, the apple is robust, sturdy enough for a marching Roman legion or a hobbit walking party. You can carry one in a lunchbox or shove it in a pocket, juggle them even, and they won't suffer much. Storage doesn't even kill the apple's flavor, and is even required to make the most of some. We think of apples as the cats of the fruit world, capable of looking after themselves. And yet, with all this magnificent abundance, its industrialized cultivation has consigned most varieties to gardens, community orchards, and extinction. Of the 17,000 varieties once known worldwide, 80% are believed to have been lost. Of the 3,000 known to have been grown in Britain, and the 2,200 currently held in the National Fruit Collection at Brogdale in Kent, only a handful are cultivated widely enough to be generally recognized, and the wonderfully varied tastes of lesser-known varieties has fallen out of common knowledge. This is a loss not just of the apple itself, but of a rich cultural heritage, and the entire orchard ecosystem that for centuries helped to shape the British landscape and provide a home to its wildlife. Around 40% of apples eaten in Britain today are grown here. English Apples and Pears, the trade body representing UK commercial growers, wants to increase this to 60% by 2030. Sales of traditional British favorites, Cox's Orange Pippin, Egremont Russet, and Worcester Pearmain, have fallen steadily for years, while Gala, Braeburn, Jazz, and Pink Lady, all originally New Zealand and Australian varieties, have been rising fast. Gala and its offshoot Royal Gala are now the biggest-selling eating apple in the UK, and total sales, including homegrown and imported Gala, are more than four times that of the old British favorite, the Cox. The number of commercial orchards in Britain has fallen around 36% in the last 20 years, and those remaining are getting bigger and cultivating ever more intensively. The industry has planted 8 million new trees in recent years and has invested £120 million in research and development. However, with the exception of Bramley's, the varieties they've invested most in are not British bred varieties. Growers cultivate around 25, but only 9 originate here. So yes, there should be more opportunities for us to eat apples grown in the UK, but the Buy British slogan tells only part of the story, as the so-called Antipodean 4 varieties are set to continue dominating the market. Traditional orchards, by contrast, were home to a variety of fruit trees, including several cultivars of apple, grown on large trees that were long-lived and widely spaced, with little or no soil disturbance required in their upkeep. Unlike annual crops, orchards were meant to last, and indeed an apple tree can live 100 years or even longer. And each orchard had its own unique ecosystem, providing a countrywide mosaic of biodiverse habitats, woodland, hedgerow, and meadow grassland for native species of plant and animal life. Apples have grown in Britain since the Romans brought them here, but it was the age of empire and the Victorian passion for gardening on the scale afforded by large fortunes that was most responsible for the blossoming of the British apple culture. Plant collectors brought back fruits from all over the world, and breeders, both commercial and those knowledgeable head gardeners employed by the wealthy, experimented with new crosses, giving some varieties their names, the Lord Burley, Lord Peckover, and Lady Hollandale, to name some from Cambridgeshire. The Victorians cultivated hundreds of new apples, and as Alison Richards in her encyclopedic study writes, connoisseurs would compare varieties, regions, and vintages with the same subtlety and intensity with which they discussed the claret. Amateur breeders and cottage gardeners also developed choice specimens. This was aided by the biology of the apple, which rarely comes true to seed and must be grafted to produce the same fruit type. So chance seedlings can sometimes produce a happy accident, deemed good enough to propagate. Any variety with the word pippin or seedling in its name indicates it was originally a natural sport selected for its virtues. History proves our current reliance on imports is nothing new. As the prestige of the British apple rose in the mid-19th century, the growing middle classes created such a thriving market for cheaper apples from France and North America that the native apple industry faced extinction. Alison Richards assesses the reaction as one of bulldog spirit. Enthusiasm for English apples acquired the intensity that arises from a sense of imminent loss. All rally to mount a veritable fruit crusade to modernize old orchards, guide the new fruit growers, beat the Yanks, and persuade fruiterers and their customers to buy English apples before it was too late. Around 3,000 acres of new orchards were planted each year during the 1880s and 90s in the traditional fruit-growing areas of Kent and Evesham, and also in new areas of eastern England, including the Cambridge area. This mid-19th century push to rescue the British industry gave rise to the large-scale fruit growing that's been so important to Cambridgeshire. The first large Bramley orchards were planted around Wisbeach, where they're still a major crop, supplying processed apple to the bakery trade. In 1851, the Chivers family bought land at Histon to supply the wholesale fresh market and jam manufacturers in the north, the Midlands, and London. The family later founded its own jam factory encouraging the planting of many new orchards in surrounding villages. The Chivers also bred their own apple varieties, including the still reliable Chivers Delight and the yellow and pink striped Histon Favorite. A strong orcharding tradition continued across Cambridgeshire for the next century, and there are over 20 local apple varieties still known to be in existence, many of which you can see at a local apple day. The One Bite Red Crockett, bred for the toffee apple trade, the Jolly Miller, believed to have been named for a Cottenham pub where the fruit was once traded, the complex-flavored Barnack Beauty, and another 20 at least are believed to have been lost. Britain's entry into the European Economic Community in the 1970s saw major changes in the economics of fruit growing. Not only did it open the doors to competing apples such as the French Golden Delicious, agricultural subsidies were heavily biased towards cereal production, and growers were offered grubbing grants to dig up their orchards and convert their land to arable use. In the past two decades, concern over the loss of orchards has prompted a number of organizations, including the East of England Apple and Orchard Project, whose knowledgeable members are to be found at apple days around the region, to undertake comprehensive studies of traditional orchards. These have found that around 90% of the orchards existing in 1950 have since disappeared, with those surviving still being vulnerable to neglect, conversion to arable land, or redevelopment. Traditional orchards are now part of the Cambridgeshire County's Biodiversity Action Plan and recognized nationally by DEFRA as designated priority habitats, valued as hotspots for biodiversity, including rare and scarce species, and for their great variety of fruit cultivars. There has been a groundswell of public interest in orchards, and in Cambridgeshire, community orchards in Trumpington, Reach, Camborne, Impington and Histon, and Midsummer Common in the city, to name a few, are reviving threatened apple varieties and working to reinstate orchard habitats. The People's Trust for Endangered Species keeps an up-to-date list of orchards and has identified 35,000 in England alone. They regularly add new orchards to the register and find new apple varieties, many that were never before recorded. It's heartening to know that even if most of our heritage apples have become commercially extinct, they're not quite biologically extinct, thanks to dedicated apple detectives, conservationists, gardeners, and volunteers. We're also blessed in this area to have local growers like the Manning Family Farm in Willingham, the Cam Valley Orchards in Meldrith, and the Heath Farm in Blentisham, who safeguard a generous variety of interesting and sometimes rare apples for sale at their farm gates. The Common Ground Environment Group, which 20 years ago initiated the annual Apple Days that have done so much to promote apples and orchards around the country, is hopeful that a corner has been turned, but cautious too, acknowledging that while we're in a far better position than we were then, we started at a low point and have a long way to go. The health of orchards and apple biodiversity is so important to our food security, so embedded in our history, culture, and national identity, and so critical to our environment that it should be integrated into the way our food is produced and securely underpinned by stewardship at every level. Perhaps one of the achievements of the grassroots movement to revive the orchard will be to encourage large retailers and growers to look beyond the presumed consumer demand for uniform red and samey sweetness, and give more space to older varieties worth preserving for their range of flavors, and not just for the sake of culinary curiosity. Our food supply will always face threats from pests and disease, climate change, and other factors we only partly foresee. And solutions to some of the problems we'll face in the future can come from the genetic information stored in these richly diverse and fruitful trees, each with its own very human story.